Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 10 of the Mysterious Benedict Society Read Aloud Podcast, Book 4. Today we'll be reading chapter 10, but first, a recap of chapter 9. Right after Kate left to go warn SQ, the other members of the society became very worried, but they hid it from Ty. We learned a bit about Ty's parents and how they were scientists working on a big project, but how when some chemicals came mixed up in the mail to them, they made some mistakes and sadly passed away. When Kate returned, she filled them in on all that had happened with McCracken and about some agents that went to check out the Tin Men's secret warehouse, but found it empty. The Tin Men and the listener rescued the other Tin Men that had just been locked up by Milligan and Kate. The Katz brothers came by Mr. Benedict's house to check if it was empty. Luckily, they found nothing. They did place two cameras on the house, though, which Rennie found immediately, and then Kate told Ty that they needed to get some rest because they were going to save the world tomorrow, and that always takes a long time. So that's the end of the summary, but before we get started today, I have a shout-out to give to A. Colley. I'm not sure that is the right pronunciation, so I'm trying my best to pronounce everyone's names and usernames correctly. So I'm so sorry if that's not how you say it, but again, guys, please try your best to explain to me either through voice message or episode questions, whatever you ask to get a voice message through, how to pronounce all of your names. I get messages from all over the world, and I would just like to give a proper shout-out to all of you. So, A. Colley, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast. I hope you continue to enjoy, and with that said, let us start the episode. Chapter 10, A Thousand Hidden Footsteps. The day, which would indeed be a long one, among the longest in Rennie's life, began early, before the sun had risen. Rennie woke to a company of bird noises outside, not the usual pre-dawn bird song, but a clamor he recognized from years of sharing a residence with a perjuring falcon. Her Majesty the Queen had just stooped upon a bird she intended as breakfast, and all the other birds in the area were picking up a ruckus of protest and alarm. No doubt many were shocked to discover that such a thing could happen. Rennie, for his part, sat up in bed with a strange awareness of misplaced anxiety. How many mornings had he awakened recently with a feeling of dread, worried that he might be about to make a bad decision, that something valuable was in the process of being broken, and that he was partly responsible for the breaking? The same feeling settled upon him this morning in his first groggy moments of consciousness. Then he remembered the more urgent threat, the extremely dangerous one, and came fully awake with a jolt. He climbed out of bed at once. It is remarkable what a good night of sleep can do, however. Rennie had been too tired to realize how tired he truly was. In particular, he had been unaware of how much his weariness had been affecting his thinking. He had gone to sleep trying, without luck, both to deduce the meaning of Mr. Benedict's message and to identify something he felt he had overlooked, something that nagged at him in a way that important things always did. He had tugged at the mental knot for only a few minutes before succumbing to sleep. Now, though, as he hurriedly changed out of his pajamas, Rennie was struck by how clear-headed he felt. He was nervous and his mind was busy, but he felt ready. After checking in with the faithful Captain Plug, who had nothing to report and went gratefully to bed, still wearing her uniform, Rennie went upstairs to the kitchen. The house was quiet and mostly dark, and Rennie moved as silently as any person could do in an old building with so many creaking floorboards, for he had long since learned where all of them were, and he could avoid the worst ones. Although, he reminded himself as he walked into the dark kitchen, there was actually a new creaking board near the pantry, a recent discovery that had made a greater impression on him than one might expect. Even houses change, Rennie thought, and it had caused an odd flutter in his stomach. Weren't houses supposed to represent stability? Sure, the society had changed a lot of things about Mr. Benedict's house on purpose, but some things, Rennie realized, they had changed simply by being there. A thousand footsteps on that particular board, and now it creaked. Every member of the society, too, bore a thousand hidden footsteps, effects of a different kind, many impossible to have predicted. Rennie flipped on the kitchen light and stifled a scream. Kate stood at the pantry, one leg raised behind her as she were in the middle of a hopscotch game. She stood that way, Rennie realized, precisely to avoid stepping on that creaking board. "Sorry to scare you," said Kate, turning from the pantry with a canister of oatmeal. She looked far more amused than sorry, Rennie noted without surprise. "Sometimes I just prefer the darkness." "I know you do," Rennie said, putting the kettle on for tea. "Are you trying to suggest that you know me well, Renard Muldoon?" "It's possible I've picked up a thing or two," Rennie said. They smiled at each other and set about making breakfast in a way that had been done many times before. Rennie handled the tea and the toast, and Kate, like a hummingbird zipping from flower to flower, moved about the kitchen handling everything else. They spoke little, only inquired about each other's sleep, good on both counts, and confirmed that nothing terrible had happened in the night. Then the bread popped out of the toaster, and Rennie realized what he'd been trying to think of. "Hey," he said as Kate handed him the platter he'd just about been to reach for. McCracken and the others lost their weapons, right? Milligan's agents took their shock watches and briefcases and so on? Of course, Kate answered, turning back to the stove. Believe me, they put as much distance as possible between the tin men and their toys. And that's something anyway, since evidently McCracken was already feeling the pinch. Too many of their weapons confiscated and not many replacements handy. At the street fair, Malie, you know, none of them had laser pointers, which was a lucky stroke for Milligan and me, but they still have a fair amount of hardware at their disposal. Right, Rennie said, and for now they'll just be redistributing what they have, but that's not what I was getting at. My question is, McCracken was probably thoroughly searched, wasn't he? Kate spun around. That letter! Rennie nodded. McCracken put it into his pocket. I'm sure they found it. Someone must have it. Seems like we ought to have a copy of it. Seems like indeed, Kate agreed. Why don't you jump on the radio? I can take over what you're doing here. Are you sure? Rennie asked, and Kate's laughter followed him as he hurried back out of the dining room where he'd left the radio. Rennie had just radioed his request to the appropriate agent when Sticky, Constance, and Ty came in, all of them still in their pajamas, all yawning. We ran into George in the hallway, Ty announced in a sleepy, raspy voice. He was confused. Sticky was rubbing his face, trying to come more awake. When I woke up in Mr. Benedict's bed, I thought I was back in my bedroom across the street, but everything had been moved around. I was completely discombobulated. And he was walking funny, Ty declared. He appeared to be prancing, Constance mumbled. Her scarlet hair had fallen across her face. She pushed it sleepily aside. I've been dreaming there were scorpions on the floor, Sticky said. I think it's easy enough to guess why. Anyway, I see you've both been up a while. Are those poached eggs, Kate? You're the absolute best. I know, said Kate, who had just swooped in from the kitchen. Now guess what? Rennie ordered a copy of the letter McCracken was reading yesterday. Sticky was pulling out a chair. He froze, looking at Kate and Rennie. How did I not think of that? None of us did, Rennie said. We were all exhausted, and we kind of had a lot to deal with. I only remembered it this morning. Now we're just waiting. Anxiously, they all sat down to breakfast. Kate had prepared a pot of oatmeal, toast, butter, and marmalade in abundance, eggs cooked three different ways, a pitcher of milk, and a variety of juices. They ate in uncharacteristic silence, waiting and thinking. Even young Ty, eating breakfast with the mysterious Benedict Society for the first time, found nothing to say. He was excited, but he also kept drifting off into sleepy early morning stares. Half an hour later, one of the morning papers arrived. This was not unusual. Several newspapers were delivered to Mr. Benedict's house every morning and evening, most of them tossed from the sidewalk and landing some distance from the door. Today, however, this particular newspaper was carried all the way to the house, where it was propped against the front door. The gate squeaked and clanged again. The delivery person went whistling away into the gloom. The front door opened a crack, and the paper fell in an unseen hand, and the door closed. I have it, said Rennie, walking into the dining room. He had already unrolled the newspaper and was flipping to the sports section, where, according to his instructions, the photocopied letter had been secreted away. He unfolded it, two sheets of unlined paper, filled front and back with handwriting so familiar it caused a shiver in Rennie, who remembered the first time he had read it. They had been at the Institute, determined but scared, and the owner of that handwriting was a brilliant and seemingly unstoppable madman. It's from Curtin, Rennie announced, and it's in code. Kate, who had been doing handstand push-ups to clear her mind, paused in her exercise and regarded Rennie upside down. A familiar one? She asked, dropping to her feet. A year or so after Mr. Curtin's capture, the Society had been given select copies of his confiscated letters, coded exchanges between him and his tenmen, and had figured out how to decipher them. It had been one of their projects. I recognize it, Rennie said, nodding. We're Sticky. He went to the bathroom, Ty said. He has to use the bathroom just like everybody else does. Everyone looked at Ty, considering the document without comment. Then Rennie sat at the table with the paper and pencil that Kate had produced from a drawer, and for several minutes he scribbled away furiously, pausing from time to time to flex his cramped hand. So what does it say? Kate asked as soon as he'd finished. You'd better read it for yourself, Rennie said, handing her the pages. With an apologetic look, he turned to Constance. You know I hate to say it, but... I get it, Constance snapped. There's some reason I shouldn't read it, because of the listener. Who's awake and back at it, by the way. Fine, whatever. I believe I'll have another cup of tea. Will someone pass me the sugar? Doesn't the listener already know what's in the letter? Asked Ty, who took up the sugar bowl, carefully cradling it in both hands, and passed it to Constance. Maybe, Rennie said. My concern isn't the letter so much as what Constance might think about it. The less she knows about some things, the better, just in case. Just in case, Ty repeated, nodding. He noticed how much sugar Constance was spooning into our cup of tea. Oh, I didn't know you could do that. Can I have some for my tea, too, please? He extended his hands toward Constance in the same cradle formation, eager to receive the sugar bowl. Constance eyed him, his askance, and continued with her spooning. He was going to have to wait. Kate finished reading the letter just as Sticky hurried back into the room, and with a significant look at Rennie, she passed it to him. From Curtin, she said, as expected. True to form, Sticky read and memorized the pages at a glance. The letter read as follows. Salutations, gentlemen. Allow me to congratulate you on your recently improved circumstances. Now to cut to the chase, for I have but the briefest opportunity to write you, my tiresome brother Benedict has informed me that all security and maintenance personnel are being evacuated from the premises, and he alone will be allowed to remain behind as a visitor, with the extraordinary security clearances. He insists that he has no fear of your infiltration, for he believes the facility to be completely impregnable. He believes, in fact, that for this reason he is safest where he is, keeping me company in his locked suite, rather than risking to move about the city, where he knows you have gathered in force. He has, however, negotiated a single exception. My devoted young follower, S. Cubidelian, has been given permission to procure a few supplies in the city and bring them to Benedict, who anticipates a potentially lengthy stay here until this situation is resolved. Yet I am told that SQ's errand must be completed before sunset, when the last guard is to under strict orders to activate the final locks, after which there should be no entry into the facility whatsoever. Such is the hope of my captors, at least. Naturally, I intend for you to spoil their plans. Time is short, therefore. This letter shall be delivered in a sealed envelope, with my signature across the seal, and deposited into our secret vault. May it find its way quickly into your hands. Gentlemen, you will not be surprised to learn that my plan is a brilliant one. Indeed, given your particular talents and tools, you're unlikely to find it even remotely challenging to accomplish. I am laying the groundwork myself, paving your path, if you will. Allow me to explain. This shall require a bit of background. For some years now, my brother Benedict has been developing a brain serum that would help the young telepath Constance Contraire to better control her abilities. During his frequent visits to me, we've discussed his research and experiments in full detail, indeed in the guise of civility, and I myself contributed the most important ideas, and although he has thus far been hesitant to test the serum on his adopted daughter, in fact won't even mention it to her, for fear of raising hopes that might eventually be dashed, I have no doubt that it would do precisely what Benedict intended. Who knows more about the complex workings of the brain than I? No one in the world. My brother runs, perhaps a distant second. Gentlemen, if you have indeed found the person we long sought, and I believe you have, as there is no other explanation for your newfound freedom, this brain serum will enable us to rapidly cultivate her gifts. She will soon be capable of previously unimaginable feats. Under my direction, she will charge the minds of key figures in government. We former institutionalists will be seen as misunderstood heroes, and our enemies will be seen as deceitful traitors. Imagine it. No security code, no password, no secret weapon or treasure in the world will be hidden from us. All will be yours for the taking. You will be rich and powerful, and I, at long last, will be in control. I will set all crooked matters straight. It will not have been the most direct path to destiny I once foresaw, but there was always more than one path, my friends. Some take longer to travel, but are more certain in their destination. Soon we shall look back upon these recent days of curdled freedom as a necessary step in a long process. The strongest tea must be allowed to steep. Yes, we shall use the serum to boost the telepath's abilities, and we shall treat her very well, offer her every comfort, until we have achieved our aims, but I still have more secrets. Though Benedict, with his limited focus, seems not to have considered the wider possibilities, to me it is abundantly clear that the serum will elevate anyone's mental abilities, will open new doorways into the brain. The effect on my brother or myself would be minimal. I'm afraid, for to express this in a way you can understand, the vast majority of the doors in our brains are already open. In other words, it would be simply impossible for either of us to become much more intelligent than we already are. But on the average mind, the effects would be extraordinary. Imagine suddenly being 3 or 4 times as smart as you were before you drank the serum. Yes, imagine being a spontaneous genius, perhaps even one as brilliant as I. Although I confess that possibility seems unlikely in the extreme. Nonetheless, I throw out the notion of my top lieutenants being intellectual giants like myself. We would truly have no boundaries. But how, you may ask, are we to acquire this serum? Allow me to explain the next part of my plan, which is, as I've mentioned, a brilliant one. Knowing as I do the precise chemical composition of the brain serum, and being, as you know, a gifted chemist, I secretly developed a formula for a pleasant poison whose chemical compounds will be precisely counteracted by those in the serum. In other words, the brain serum is the antidote to the poison. Over the last year, in accordance with my secret instructions, likewise delivered in sealed, signed envelopes, SQ has met with a network of black market chemists, each of whom participated in one, and only one, part of the process of formulating the poison. Thus, no single one of them knows the complete recipe, if you will. SQ himself knows nothing of my overall plan, having been given to understand that I am simply helping former acquaintances with their personal, private research. Today, however, among the supplies he's being dispatched to obtain will be a famously delicious variety of tea, prepared by the last link in my chain of chemists, and awaiting pickup at a charming little tea shop not far from the location of the vault. Perhaps you begin to see how my plan is developing. SQ will deliver this poison tea that my unwitting brother and I shall drink together. Yes, I shall have to drink it as well, for Benedict is the one who shall have to prepare it, and I'm afraid he is far too observant and clever not to notice any sleight of hand on my part. Afterward, I shall alert him to what we have consumed. He will understand as well as I what the effects of the poison will be. A day or two of increasing drowsiness, accompanied by a general sense of well-being. I told you it was a pleasant poison, concluding with a deep, unwooting seep. You see how I put my fate in your hands. I am satisfied with any outcome, however. If I cannot join you in freedom, I am content to leave the world of the waking. Either way, I shall have my escape. But Benedict naturally will wish to avoid letting the curtain fall so abruptly on his own life's production. Therefore, I will urge him to seek assistance. He will be unable to leave the facility, however, for he will be locked inside, the so-called visitor's area of my security suite. And so he will be compelled to communicate telepathically with the young contraire. You'll recall that it was by this means that Benedict illustrated our headquarters on our last fateful day of freedom. Now, one of Benedict's associates, the young Mr. Washington, knows the precise formula of the brain serum and has already access to the necessary chemicals. He will no doubt promptly formulate a quantum of serum and attempt, with the help of Benedict's other young minions, to deliver this antidote to my brother, and I suppose to me as well, lest they all be accused of allowing my demise when they could have prevented it. Despite this facility's supposedly impenetrable nature, those four are resourceful enough, as you have seen for yourselves, and my brother knows the facility well enough that I am confident they will make their way in. What they won't know until too late is that you will be following them. That's correct, gentlemen. You only have to follow them, applying pressure from behind to speed them along, and using the example of their own progress through various layers of security whenever you find it expedient. Certainly, you are supremely skilled when it comes to herding your way into out of places. But in this case, it may be helpful, even necessary, to adopt some young intruder's own methods of infiltrating the facility. For they may be well informed by Benedict himself. Even more important, however, is that their presence here will be crucial in breaking the last and truly impregnable barrier into my suite. My foolish brother will open doors for them that he would not open for anyone else, not even to save himself. I repeat at last, one or two members of his beloved foursome must be present when you arrive at the final security door. Otherwise, I fear your efforts will have been in vain. And now you see why my plan is brilliant. In one fell swoop, we shall secure both the brain serum and our freedom, and together we shall make our escape into our new life. Much to the horror, I might add, of Benedict and his lackeys, who will be compelled to see it all unfold, miserably aware that they have played keys in our escape. I anticipate a final question. How exactly are we to make this escape? Even with the use of signal disruption to disable the facility's alarm systems, we cannot simply retrace your footsteps. Never fear. You'll understand my basis for saying that I know far more about present invasions than anyone would ever guess. This is relevant fact for more than a few reasons. First, as it happens, I, and I alone, know the whereabouts of a secret cache of weapons, weapons of my own design, ones you have used with such gusto throughout your careers. Your current supply must be precious low, limited to the emergency store that the Katz brothers will have raided prior to your liberation. Those should prove sufficient to help you make your way to me. Then you shall have a fresh abundance at your disposal. What's more, and oh, it is so very much more, there is yet another weapon here, one with which you are unfamiliar. It has always remained hidden. Not a soul in the world has ever known of its existence. Indeed, few would have even thought it possible. The same might have been said of my Whisperer, of course. Even you doubted its abilities until I had demonstrated them. But although the Whisperer failed, in the end, to charge the world forever, I have another secret means of doing so. I require only a little help from you. Come and see, gentlemen. Prepare to be amazed. Finally, as for our exit, rest easy. You have only to reach me. Once you have done so, you may confidently place your fate in my hands. I have considered every angle, every potential obstacle, and I am triumphant in my conviction. Only reach me, gentlemen, and everything will go precisely according to my plan. I look forward to re-establishing our acquaintance soon. I hope this letter finds you in good health, etc. Cordially, Al Curtin. P.S. Should it interest you, I composed this entire letter in a mere 11 minutes, and as you can see, there is not a single strikeout or misspelling. Remarkable. As remarkable as it may have been to compose such a letter in 11 minutes, even more remarkable to the average observer would be to see Sticky Washington read the same letter in a matter of seconds. His friends were hardly average observers, however, and were so used to seeing his prodigious abilities in action that they registered not the faintest surprise when Sticky reached the end of the letter almost as soon as it had been handed to him. His expression was now the same as Rennie's and Kate's, for all of them were silently thinking about the letter. Sticky, for his part, was essentially reading it again, looking at a perfect image of it in his mind, which led to a surprising announcement from Ty. "I can see the letter in George's mind," he declared. "I can read it." Sticky's eyes widened, and for a moment his expression turned guilty, as if he had shared the letter with the little boy on purpose. Then he looked concerned. They all did. "You can read, Ty?" Rennie asked. Ty's chin was raised. His eyes turned upward and slightly to the side. He had the expression of a person trying to remember something. He nodded slowly in response to Rennie's question, and continued in the same attitude, presumably still looking at the letter in his mind's eye. Constance said, "This is probably not good, correct?" The others all opened their mouths, then closed them again, trying to think of what to say or do. This was not a problem they had foreseen. Several moments passed in confused silence until Ty interrupted it. "What does salutations mean?" he asked, and then he giggled. "Why did you all just sigh at the same time? Why do you all look like that?" It was true they all looked extremely relieved, and none more than said Sticky, who had done nothing wrong, of course, yet couldn't shake the feeling that he had single-handedly caused a potentially dangerous problem. Rennie was right. There were things in that letter that Constance shouldn't know, and if Constance shouldn't know them, a 5-year-old boy with unpredictable telepathic abilities certainly shouldn't know them either. "I'm going to take a break to clear my head," Sticky said, and quickly left the room. "Hey, sport," Kate said to Ty, "where's my bucket? Don't tell me you left it in Constance's room with no one to guard it." Ty's mouth fell open. "But I did," he whispered. "I'll go get it." He ran out. As soon as he was gone, Rennie said to Constance, "Mr. Benedict needs our help. The situation is dangerous, no question about it, but I want you to see, no, I need you to see, how confident I am that Mr. Benedict is going to be okay. Don't dig too deeply, all right, but take a good look at my certainty." "Mine too," Kate said. Constance rolled her eyes. "You're always certain, Kate. That doesn't mean no good." She looked at Rennie. "Obviously, you've just made me really worried about what's going on with Dad." "I know," Rennie said. "I'm sorry." Constance was staring intently at him. "It's okay, I get it, and your confidence helps. I do see it, and it helps. So what can I know?" "I'm assuming you haven't reached out to him since yesterday, right?" Rennie asked. "With Miss Nosy Pants eavesdropping? Of course not." "You're going to need to now," Kay said. "He probably has a message for us. Don't worry about the listener getting in, too. It can't be helped." "Now as in right now?" Constance asked. "Right this second? Just sitting here at the dining table? You two are making me nervous." "Right this second," Kate confirmed, and Rennie signaled his agreement. "Wow, okay then, here we go." Constance took a deep breath and closed her eyes. "First, I'm letting him know that we're safe," she murmured. "That's right, listener lady, no thanks to you. Okay, here he is. He's safe too. He's still with Uncle Horrible," she said, using her favorite nickname for Mr. Curtin. "SQ isn't there, but I guess he brought them something. Tea? Mr. Curtin's drink some tea. I don't know why this is important. Dad's showing me the container it came in. Fancy stuff, I guess. Uh-oh. Okay. He's imagining a skull and crossbones. Do you think he means poison? The tea was poisoned?" "Yes," Rennie said softly. "That's what he means." "Wow. Okay," Constance murmured again. She was silent a moment. "He knows that the listener is eavesdropping. I can tell. He's being very careful about what he tries to communicate." "Tell him about the letter," Rennie said. "That will make it easier for him. Tell him Mr. Curtin sent a secret letter to McCracken, and we've got a copy of it. We know everything about his situation." Constance did as Rennie suggested, and after a pause, she said, "He understands. Tell him that Sticky can make the serum." Constance opened one eye. "What serum? Is it for saving Uncle Horrible? Right, sorry, never mind. No questions. Okay, I'll tell him." She closed the eye. Another pause. She frowned. "He says he's sorry. He doesn't want us to take the risk. He really doesn't... I can tell. Especially not me, of course." She shrugged, her eyes still closed. "I don't know what he's talking about, but of course he doesn't want us to take any risks." When he was chewing on his lip, Kate was watching him. "If you're going to think of something clever," she muttered, "seems like now will be a good time." "Okay," Rennie said. "Constance, tell him not to worry. Tell him we aren't going to take any risks. We'll figure out some other way to help him." Constance opened one eye again. "He isn't going to believe that, you know. I don't know how I'm supposed to make him believe it when I know it isn't true myself." "It doesn't matter whether he believes it or not," Rennie said. "He isn't the only person who can hear your thoughts." "Oh, her?" Constance shook her head skeptically. "I doubt she'll believe it either, Rennie. Even if she does, McCracken won't, and you'll know she'll tell McCracken." "Can you please just try? It's not your fault if it doesn't work. Just try." Constance sighed. "Okay, Mr. Mastermind, I'll try and tell him we aren't going to take any risks." She concentrated a while with her eyes closed. "No, I don't think he believes me," she murmured. "He just repeated that he wants us to be safe. He's keeping something from me, but maybe it's just because he doesn't want the listener to know." Constance gasped. Her eyes popped open. "He drank the tea too, didn't he?" Her face was suddenly awash of horror. "This isn't just about Mr. Curtin. It's about him." Rennie jumped from his chair and went to Constance, who looked up at him with brimming eyes. He placed his hands on her cheeks, holding her face steady. "Look at me," he said. "Do you remember my confidence that Mr. Benedict is going to be fine? How often have you seen me be so confident and then be wrong?" Never? Constance whispered, staring back at him. Almost never, anyway. She squeezed her eyes closed, trying not to cry, but tears trickled down her cheeks regardless, wetting Winnie's fingers. I'm trying not to dig too deeply. I want to know what's making you so confident, but I know... He's so confident because we're better than they are, Kate said firmly. Despite herself, Constance gave a little snort. She smirked. Yes, we are, she mumbled, her eyes still closed. Is that enough to help? Winnie asked. Can you just trust us that everything will be okay? Constance nodded. Fine, she muttered. I hate it, but fine. Now get your hands off my face. When Ty and Light trotted back into the room carrying Kate's bucket, he saw Constance wiping her eyes with her pajama sleeves, Kate at the dining room table loading a plate with toast and eggs, and Winnie walking back and forth with his hand clasped behind him. This is weird, Ty exclaimed. What's everyone doing? Constance is recovering from a bit of shock, Kate said. Rennie is singing about Mr. Benedict's message from yesterday, and I am eating a second breakfast. Because what good is a dining table if no one is dining? That's true, Ty exclaimed. He made a beeline for the sugar bowl. Rennie stopped pacing. He had already felt himself on the verge of something, and now Kate had given him precisely the push he needed. Okay, listen, he said to no one in particular. Mr. Benedict was giving us instructions yesterday, and the very first line focused on a place. The place we weren't supposed to hunt the hunter. Now, I don't think he'd send us out on some wild goose chase in the city, not with the beggar's dozen in town. True enough, Kate said, go on. Sensing that her second breakfast was about to be interrupted, she made a sandwich of her eggs toast and took a huge bite. Wow, you chew so fast, Kate, Ty said. You think we're supposed to look somewhere here, Constance said to Rennie, in this house? He couldn't come out and say that, of course, not if there was any chance the listener could overhear. He wanted to make it completely confusing for her, but easy for us. And it should have been easy. Think about it. What name is being defied by one who stands? I have thought about it, Kate said between bites. Does it depend on who's doing the standing, or is it the hunter? Kate's mention of the hunter was the last piece of the puzzle for Rennie. I know who the hunter is, he said excitedly. But it isn't his name that's being defied by one who stands. It isn't a person's name at all. Kate was rising from the table, sandwich in hand. Can you stop talking and maybe... Right, Rennie said. I'll show you. Let's go.